You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
He has to pay the iron price. He has to pay the iron price. I'll never respect you while he lives.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Choppers, Cersei, Illin, pay the hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood in the north when it all comes down. My word is my bond, and my bond is my word. Valar to Harris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies, and time slips by. Valar my rulers, all men must die.
Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, brought to you by the Bald Move Network. We're the officially unofficial podcast for HBO's Game of Thrones television series. This is the instant take. We have just seen episode 4 of season 4 entitled Oathkeeper. Mm-hmm. Jim, you know that scene in Spaceballs where the evil ball empire, the Spaceballs, go to ludicrous speed and they go so fast they make the jump to plaid?
Yeah.
That is what the show just did.
Perfect. I'm wearing a lot of plaid tonight.
As you are, and as a book reader, I feel like I'm Starbuck in my Winnebago, just with my jaw open, seeing this vast amount of plaid in space. They went so far past the books. They've colored outside the lines before,
That's
but this is something us book readers haven't been privy to. That shit at the end?
Uh-huh.
Totally new information.
The White Walkers stealing Craster's babies.
And taking them up there and White Walkerizing them, apparently. Yeah, winterizing the babies, shall we say?
Sure.
You know, you got to change the blood out for antifreeze and a couple other
little clear coating.
Things. Yeah.
Of the eyes.
You need that clear coat up north of the wall. You betcha.
Oh, yeah.
You're going to want that clear coat. Jesus, man. I've got so much to say.
That's
and unfortunately,
crazy.
You are worthless to discuss it with.
Right? That's weird because my perspective, not a ton happened in this episode from a viewer's perspective.
Okay.
Not having read the books. It's not like I'm seeing, oh my God, it's so much different than the books.
Well,
it's just like,
obviously.
Yeah, some stuff happened, but nothing very crazy at all, in my opinion.
And I'm going to say that before I've gone on to Reddit and I've seen the book purist brigade up in arms about it, which I don't even know if they will be, super excited. Loved what I'm seeing. I thought this was a great episode up and until it got to that moment. And then I just don't even know how to judge it by normal episode standards.
Huh. Okay.
Like my girlfriend and I were holding each other's hands going like, oh my God, oh my God. When they went to that fucking Crystal City or whatever.
To the Fortress of Walker Solitude.
To the Fortress of Walkertude.
Yeah.
What do you think? This is perfect, because we both know what the hell we're talking about.
Sure.
Great. What do you think happened, man?
Well, obviously, they're stealing Craster's babies. I was wondering at that point, is the entire White Walker society made up of this guy's babies? Like, I don't know how many of them there are.
Yeah.
I know that they're formidable, but I don't know their numbers.
Yeah.
For all I know, it could be all of his kids.
Is there something different about the White Walkers wearing loincloths and riding desiccated horses versus the White Walkers in the black, almost like armor?
Yeah.
Kryptonian armor, if we're going to continue this Fortress of Solitude theme.
With like horns and...
Yeah, they had a little Darth Maul action going on.
I think there's a hierarchy in there. And that's interesting because I never actually viewed the White Walkers as kind of a faction unto themselves.
Right.
It was just kind of a force.
Yeah.
It wasn't, they had no personality. They weren't beings. They were just a thing. Now that's kind of thrown up into the wind. I don't know where, I don't know how to categorize them now.
Do you think it could be that the distinction between the loincloth wearing desiccated horse riders and the uber White Walkers is that the others, the first, are like half breeds? That they're human babies that are turned into White Walkers versus White Walkers that are pureborn.
Interesting. I don't I don't know that White Walkers can have babies.
You got
like, I don't know anything about White Walkers.
I don't either.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, wow. I don't know. I mean, we've never been that far north. Ever in any form of media, and the double D's have taken us there. It's going to be a lively spoiler section. I'm feeling.
I bet. Yeah.
And I can't wait to see what people are talking about. I mean, what's interesting, and I always come back to when I think about the White Walkers, is George R. R. Martin said long ago that abstract ideas of good, absolute good and evil, he thinks are boring.
Huh. Okay.
And that's the one weakness I think that he identified of like J.R.R. Tolkien's books, is that you've got this incorrupt, you got this absolute evil Sauron and Morgoth versus this incorruptible good in the form of Aragorn and Gandalf. So, but it always seemed to me that the White Walkers defied that, that they are absolute evil. But I always try to think, it's like, well, maybe they're more of an elemental force. Maybe they're...
Yeah, that's how I viewed them.
You know, they're like a something like an earth god or, you know, there's some kind of balance in the world, and them encroaching upon the world's men is a symptom of that world being out of balance. But there's a place where there maybe it's appropriate that they live. I don't know how this scene feeds into all that.
Yeah.
Because the thing is they didn't seem exceptionally menacing. I mean, other than converting the baby to White Walker, but we don't even know. I mean, Craster, for all intents and purposes, wanted them dead.
Yeah.
Or didn't even care what's happening to them.
Would so they leave could be viewed as saving them, right?
Would leave them out there to freeze. And it didn't look like they did anything. They weren't mean to the baby.
No. They weren't spanking it.
I mean, when the one White Walker looked down at the baby from the horse, it didn't... I mean, it wasn't especially paternal, but it also wasn't... You know, it's not like it was just carrying it over its shoulder like a sack of potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Really disturbing to watch a naked baby in a pile of snow, though.
Oh, yeah? Just being left out there?
Yeah. This show is hard to watch sometimes, at least for me.
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you have anything else to say on that scene before we talk about the many other things that were happening?
Not really. I mean, as a show viewer only, it's not quite as shocking to me. I mean, it's something,
because
you're
just like, you probably didn't even know.
No, I didn't know. I didn't know. And I was like, oh, okay, that's a new thing about the White Walkers.
Would you consider is it a spoiler to say that that is not part of the books?
No, I would say if anything, it's a book spoiler maybe.
There's already at least some people that seem to be upset in the Facebook thread that Jesse B, for example, says, well, that just spoiled the books. Fuck.
Well, but no, that's a mega spoiler. That's like...
It
doesn't spoil anything that's in the books. It just says this isn't in the books. That's like if I was saying X-Files is not a part of Game of Thrones. Oh, God, well, you just spoiled the books.
I think if you are a passionate book fan who's been well pleased by how the series has treated the books... Seeing this and thinking that this might be part of an alternate reality where, like, you know, it's a Star Trek reboot where this might not even happen in the books, that's almost worse.
Okay. All right.
And the fact that this could be spoiling a scene that we later see in the books, I think, is painful to them. We talked about this in a preview cast, that whole dynamic about, you know, this becoming a series based on George Martin's works. To George Martin writing the adapted screenplay of a Game of Thrones brought to you by HBO. Uh-huh. That stings like an anal fissure to book fans, I think.
I bet it does.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
King Tommen.
Oh yeah. Oh God. Yeah.
Utterly defenseless against the Death Star that is Marjorie Tyrell,
and not in a bad way. He's like, Marjorie says we ought to get to know each other, and can I come visit you again? Yes, you can.
Yeah, she was using a 10% of her super laser powers.
That kid is like, he's living the dream. At that point, it's like, oh, what? I'm king. Okay, yeah. Great. And I have this amazingly hot bride lined up. Oh, okay. Is this my life?
Who I'm going to possess, and she wants to get to know me. And
yeah.
She, you know, her mother could come in the next morning and say Marjorie Tyrell is the devil.
Uh-huh.
And you shall not play that foosball. It's done. Done.
Yeah, he is, Marjorie just clinched the title there.
Lock, stock, and smoking hot body.
Yeah, well done. Well done. I love that scene. I loved a couple of scenes. Oh, my God. Speaking of people giving things, Jamie giving Brienne.
Oathkeeper.
Oh, man. Oathkeeper, a freaking sweet set of armor. He's given Podrick the axe that Tyrion used in Blackwater. That's incredible. I was so happy to see all that.
How does this change your opinion of Jamie and Brienne's relationship? There's some big lumps in throats when those two said goodbye.
Yeah, I mean, as far as them being in love, I don't know that it has changed my opinion. I think my opinion was that during the purple wedding, she realized that she was in love with him.
Right.
When Cersei was speaking, and I think that is still true. And I like that he sent her off to find Sansa in direct defiance of Cersei. It says a lot about him caring for her over Cersei at this point. Because Cersei, oh my God, have I missed something in the year of absence that Jaime had where she just totally hates him now?
Well, it's interesting because I thought this was going to be the lead until they blew my mind at the end about how... You know, because people debated all week long about how the difference between the books where, you know, it's quote-unquote consensual but complicated versus the show where it's very clearly rape, how that was going to tie in.
We should talk about that.
I thought that that Cersei acted like a woman of some power, with a very familiar associate. It's very hard to find the right words for this. Mm-hmm. Took horrible advantage of. And that she seemed extremely frosty, and rightfully so, very stiff and about how she felt about her brother. What was your feeling?
It was weird, because coming off of the rape scene last episode, it didn't feel like there was a rape last episode. She was much more calm and collected than I expected her to be.
How would you expect Cersei to react to something like that? To me, this is exactly how I'd imagine her to react to something like that.
It felt like she was just stuffing it down and not talking about it, not just hitting him about it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
She wasn't throwing it in his face, like mentioning it at all. It was just like, granted, she calls him Lord Commander at the end, and that's a very formal thing to say, and it was meant to show how little she cares about him at this point. But it didn't feel like there was this very raw nerve that I would expect would be there if it was rape.
Interesting, because I think there's three outcomes we can have from what I would say is the debacle of last week, you know, judging from how the filmmakers said they saw it versus what we saw. One was there was going to be, you know, it's unambiguously that Cersei was raped by Jaime, and that was going to change their relationship and change their dynamic. B, they wanted to be one thing and they kind of fucked it up, and we were going to have to kind of shrug our shoulders and kind of pretend like it didn't happen and just kind of go on the show. Three, it was going to be something that so fundamentally altered people's perception of Jamie that there was going to be some people that just couldn't see his character the same way, and some people might be turned off from the show.
I feel like it was the second one.
Okay, because I feel like it was much closer to A than I was thinking it was going to be. And again, this is just...
A being we should have known that it was not...
No, that Cersei got raped, and this is how Cersei would react to her brother forcing himself on her against her will. Especially since it's not just that, but the realization is she can't get him to do what she wants him to do, and he doesn't really listen to her.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, the very next scene he gives.
So he took from her, you know, this thing, and he's not even like on her team on this thing. I feel like, again, a person like Cersei, I would entirely buy the reaction to a sexual assault happening to her from someone that she loved or trusted.
Okay.
And now I think that she's kind of put him into the, you know, them in the us versus them camp. You know, you're aligned with my brother.
Yeah.
And you won't even go after Sansa Stark. You won't do, you know, you're more loyal to fucking dead woman of our bitter enemies than you are to me. And also, you raped me. I was pleasantly surprised that it was closer to the first thing that I thought would happen, with shades of, you know, if he had A, B, and C.
Yeah.
It was mostly A with shades of B. And you're saying you're solidly in shades of B.
Not solidly, no. It's somewhere between B and A, but it's more to B. It's more to, like, they just didn't properly tell us what happened there. And that we were supposed to suspect that it was a little more consensual than I initially thought it was.
I still think it's going to be very hard for a lot of people to see Jamie in a sympathetic light.
Oh, yeah.
In fact, I wonder how a lot of people are going to see him, you know, kind of chivalrously giving this sword to, and, you know, this talk
of
being
an
oathkeeper.
Yeah, that's part of it, right?
That, you know, it's like, right, I mean, just last episode, if he raped his sister, and now he's being this, like, really virtuous, you know, kind of, you know, fallen knight character.
Yeah, and it's not that just that he's being that, but that they're showing us that.
And that Brienne, like, a character that we've been beat through a head, that she is a paragon of virtue,
pure
is having
good.
These moments with him. I mean, that's complex and interesting dynamic, because she doesn't know any of this happened.
Well, that makes me feel like the creators and the directors and the writers and everybody were trying to show one thing and just failed, because it's very confusing as an audience member to see a character one week doing something awesome for Brienne,
right,
even before the rape,
right,
doing something awesome, having this connection with a person who we know to be super good.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next week raping someone, and then the next week coming back and doing the same thing, being nice and having these great moments. It's very confusing as a viewer.
The problem is, because I was watching the scene and I'm like, okay, well, maybe he, you know, again, putting aside my personal thoughts, it's just like I've said in Walking Dead. Sometimes they didn't make the choice I wanted to make. They did a bad job of storytelling. I can sit and bitch and whine about that forever. Or I can say, well, they wanted me to think this, or they wanted me to think this now, and I'm going to, you know, kind of bygones and go forward. When I was watching that, I was like, okay, well, maybe I'm supposed to think that that was more consensual than it was portrayed. But I keep coming back to the relationship between Jaime and Cersei, I feel, was fundamentally changed. And I think you think so too, or else you wouldn't have said what you said.
I do, yeah.
So, and I want to move on, because there's still a lot to talk about, and I want to leave that to the full cast.
Okay.
So I'm caught between Jamie still being, you know, he doesn't play, like, haunted or disturbed, or his part of the relationship doesn't seem to change, but Cersei's did. I'm having a trouble processing that, and I don't know how to move forward on that.
Okay.
We talked about Tommen. We talked about Tommen seems like decent king material.
Yeah, he seems like a good kid. I
like him instinctively in a way I did not like Joffrey.
Well,
instinctively.
We haven't seen him, I don't know, tie anyone to a bed and kill them.
I don't think this
kid's
capable of it.
Yeah. That's really the difference. He's not cruel like Joffrey was. And Littlefinger says as much, you know, in his scenes with Sansa, which I think it's a good time to talk about that.
Yes.
Because they spell it out, man.
I think they did a little too much.
Me too. I was like, give us a little credit.
Yeah, they could have done the Littlefinger thing, which I think they should, because I really like the scene between Littlefinger and Sansa.
Uh-huh.
And it struck it did a lot to show us how Sansa is growing. It did a lot to kind of frame maybe how we should think about Peter Baelish.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think they did need to connect some of these dots and resolve, unless they wanted just to be an open ended mystery, which I think is pointless. Then going
back, like, last episode resolved most of that, though.
I did, but it's appropriate for him to work that through with Sansa, and it was a kind of an interesting exercise, because it's basically, you know, I guess for the listeners that were still, or the watchers that were still having trouble, her piecing it out and him kind of being the schoolmaster was an interesting way to do that.
Sure. And the only piece that we were actually missing was the piece that says who helped him, who at the Purple Wedding helped him. And it tells us, it uses very economical visual storytelling to tell us this. It, as he's saying, my new friends are very reasonable, it is showing us Elena. It makes perfect sense. Elena's the one who helped him. That was really good,
Olenna,
but I felt like
the
Olenna,
the Queen
yeah.
of Thorns. Okay,
but I felt like the rest of it, the stuff with the vial, which they already showed us last episode, was pointless.
I also didn't think that flashing over to the Tyrells and having Lady Olenna and Marjorie discussing it again. And Marjorie just seemed thick.
Okay,
and Marjorie from season two, season three is many things, but she is not thick in the mental capacity.
Yeah, or the physical capacity. Either one.
I don't know. I don't have a good view of her. I mean, I'd have to see a little bit. I'd have to refresh my memory of her ass before I'd say thick or not thick.
Okay.
But anyway, regardless, she's not slow-witted, and she seemed kind of slow. And I think that's a shame because it made the viewers feel stupid or talked down to, and it made a character who's so far has been playing these games of politics expertly seem more like grandma's puppet than a person who with her own agency and power as well.
Sure, I can buy that.
And like, I don't think Marjorie really needed grandma to spell out what she should do with Tommen.
No. She knows. Elena said that
Was the Queen of Thorns in her fucking bedroom when she's trying to talk Renly into sexing her up with her brother? I mean, come on, this woman
or
is
wielding
capable.
The crossbow with Joffrey. Like,
yes.
She knows what she's doing.
Yeah, that was strange. That was a little weird for me. And it felt like, because again, my mind is so blown from the last scene, I felt like another episode.
Here are the highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
House of the Dragon Season 2 is coming up sooner than you think. And to get us all back in that Leal state of mind, Aaron and I have teamed up with Maester Anthony to bring you coordinated coverage, new and old. For the next 10 weeks leading up to Season 2, Maester Anthony will be releasing an episode of his Season 1 coverage on the Hot D podcast. He originally recorded and released it exclusively on his Double Dragon podcast, so while it's retro coverage, it's almost certainly new to you.
In addition, each Friday, Jim and I will be reading the relevant sections of George Martin's Targaryen history book, Fire and Blood, so that we can compare and contrast it to that week's episode of Hot D Season 1. So grab a copy of Fire and Blood and read along with us if you're so inclined. Just don't read ahead, unless you enjoy spoilers.
If that's not enough to satisfy your craving for fantasy entertainment, well, you're in luck. We recently watched King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, which is Guy Ritchie's uniquely stylish and anachronistic riff on the King Arthur legend. Yes, Guy Ritchie took on the most famous of all English legends and did it with huge ambitions. Sadly, or perhaps thankfully, depending on your tastes, his ambitions were cut short by meager audience interest. Join us for the podcast this Tuesday as we discuss why that might have been and whether this retelling is any good.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
FX is adapting James Clavell's best-selling novel, Shogun, into a 10-part miniseries this spring. Set in the shogunate period of Japan at the turn of the 15th century, Shogun depicts the rise of a feudal lord to Shogun, as seen through the eyes of a shipwrecked English sailor. It's loosely based on the real-life exploits of William Adams and Tokugawa Ieyasu.
Shogun has already been successfully adapted back in 1980 with a widely acclaimed miniseries starring Richard Chamberlain, featuring intricate plots, political scheming, complex characters, and thrilling action. This time, husband and wife team Justin Marks and Rachel Kondo try to recapture the successes of the novel and early adaptations while increasing the levels of historical and cultural accuracy that are often perceived as flaws of this and similar works.
Starring Hiroyuki Sanada from The Last Samurai, Mortal Kombat, and John Wick 4, with Cosmo Jarvis of Peaky Blinders, Raised by Wolves, etc., joining the truly massive cast required to bring this complex world to life. Join Aaron and I each week as we deep dive into each episode, uncovering the mysteries, the intrigue, and the glory of Shogun.
Shogun premieres on FX Hulu Tuesday, February 27th, with a two-part debut. Our podcast will release each Thursday thereafter. Get our Shogun coverage by searching for Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
So we talked about Peter and Sansa. What else have we missed?
There's
here?
Danny, which Dan- I was
Holy
I
shit.
Was slightly disappointed in. They spent zero of the season three saved budget on this fucking freedom escapade.
I liked it.
We were hoping to see, like, I at least wanted to see a zoom out shot where you see all of the corridors in the city, and there are just
slaves,
miles of slaves rushing.
Like, an ocean breaking on
the map. Just a sea of killing. That's what I wanted to see. And even for a couple seconds would have been awesome. And we saw literally nothing. So that was pretty disappointing in my
opinion. But again, that's true to the books, because Martin ducks a lot of action scenes as well.
Okay.
I thought, okay, so there's something that we're not going to have time to talk about, but that I quite enjoyed and I want to talk about in the main cast, is Miss Sandy's relationship with Grey Worm. Scene during the lesson where she was teaching him, I guess, because he speaks Valyrian. And
he speaks
very broken, common tongue or whatever, Westerosi.
Yeah.
She's teaching him that, but there seems to be something more than brother and sister, but something less than lovers between them.
Yeah. I got that vibe too.
I want to talk about that. We could talk about the invasion. I thought it was handled very well, having the Unsullies dress up as slaves and infiltrate and arm the, you know, as a rebel force. I thought that was really cool.
Yep.
There's one other thing I know. Bronn and Jaime.
Uh-huh.
Any thoughts on that? Or should we... Let's save that for the full cast, too, because we're kind of running
low.
We can
do that.
How
about the other B word, Bran? There's a lot of Bran in this episode.
Lots of Bran.
Lots of Bran, lots of Jon Snow. We haven't talked about either.
That's another one where, like... They're ranging so far beyond the books that it's kind of like leading an armed incursion against Craster's Keep from the Wall. That sounded better in my head than I executed.
Yeah.
Might be the whiskey.
Could be.
What do you think? What, having him camped outside Craster's Keep, having Summer pent up with his brother, the potential of Bran. You know, people have been saying, like, does John know about Bran? Shit, it's possible Bran and John meet this coming episode.
Yeah, they're both headed to the same place.
What do you think? Is that an interesting storytelling possibility?
Sure. Yeah, I think it is.
What are they going to say to each other?
Well, it's going to be interesting because you've got Ramsay, who's going to ride north to try to find Jon Snow.
Ramsay? Who the fuck are you talking about? You talking about Locke?
Locke? Who's Locke?
He's the turncoat from the Boltons.
No. I'm talking about Ramsay back in Winterfell.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. So he's riding north to find Jon Snow, right?
I think he sent Locke up there to hunt him down. Boys. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, you're right.
He's got something else cooking that we have not seen an update for like two episodes.
Yeah. And now he's in the group. Right.
Locke.
That's going north.
Yes.
Up north of the wall. So, I don't know. Once he finds Bran up there and he's got Jon Snow, bad shit's going to happen, man. He's going to turn on them so fast. He's going to help out Craster's guys.
And they've kind of retconned this guy that took over Craster's Keep as a genuine badass.
Yeah, I wasn't buying him so much as a badass, though.
Oh, really?
Like, okay. He was drunk, he could barely stand up. Like, if anybody wanted to fight him at that point, he'd be dead, I'm sure.
He seems like the nerdy British scientist from, goddamn, Pacific Rim.
I haven't seen
that. That jacked into Monster's Brain with Charlie Day.
Okay.
In fact, it could be the same actor. If so... Horrible casting job, because I agree, and it's just a physical performance thing.
Yeah,
I don't buy this guy. I think Fat Pig Face could take this dude.
Yeah.
If he just, you know, get up the courage and this guy stop running his mouth.
I'm with you. Yeah.
Anyway, kind of interesting stuff. A lot of hard stuff to watch. Lots of brutal rape, brutality to women, babies left out in the cold.
Yep.
Again, reminder, this show gets real. What else we got to talk about?
I think that's about it.
All right. I know I'm probably going to get a lot of emails this week. I'm looking forward to it. Game of Thrones at baldmove.com. You can participate in our live threads, semi-live threads. Well, yeah, they're live threads. On facebook.com/baldmove. No book spoilers on any public Facebook threads, please. Please don't make me delete your comments.
Or delete your Facebook account. He can do that.
Or, I haven't had to ban anybody, but I would like to keep that streak alive. And you can also talk to Jim at Twitter or on Twitter at Bald Move. Please keep him spoiler free, though.
Man, this show, I don't really go on Twitter live on this show because it's so hard for me to follow, as is so many characters, so many places.
Sure. I find the same way. Like, I'll do a comment here and there, and there's no commercials.
Yeah, that's another thing.
It's much harder to live, but I do like to get in there and give my 2 cents here and there and immediately after the show. So lots of stuff going on. Really looking forward to seeing your emails at gameofthrones@baldmove.com. I think that's it. We'll have our full cast out with lots of your feedback and our custom spoiler section on Tuesday. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See you in a couple days.
He has to pay the iron price. He has to pay the iron price. I'll never respect you while he lives.
Watch it all come around as I lay on the ground. Joffrey's thirsty, ill and pay the hound. They all think I'm lost, but I know where I'm found. I'm the blood of the North when it all comes down. My bond and my bond is my word. Valar to Harris, all men must serve. See as the raven flies and time slips by. Valar, my rulers, all men must serve.